It will be in the background, he said. It will be in the background.
My daughter, a support worker, after class on Wednesdays, who loves to cook and is into salsa dancing.
Mabel is the website that's revolutionising disability support. It lets you find and choose people offering the support that you want. And because we're online, it's easy and affordable. Find your people at mabel.com.au.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Crew Chat, your weekly podcast for everything disability. Today, I have with me Ibi D, and I have with me John Carlo and Jonathan Shah and myself, David D. What are we going to be talking about today, Jonathan?
So today, we're going to be talking about federal budget and the effect will have on the disability.
So the federal budget and the effectiveness of the, for how effective it is for people with disability?
Yes. And by the way, we're very pleased to be joined by John Carlo. Hello.
Hi, David. Hi, Jonathan. Lovely to be here.
Thanks for joining us, John Carlo. So you're going to be talking about the federal budget and its effectiveness.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, no, I, for those who don't know me, I am from People with Disability Australia, where I head up policy. And myself and our president, Samantha Connor, who some of you may know, were in Canberra this week for the whole week, and we were there for the budget on Tuesday night. So, yeah, so we were in the thick of it, so to speak. And it was not necessarily a good budget for people with disability. It was a late and mean budget, actually, is what we called it on Tuesday night, because there wasn't really much for the disability community to be celebrating.
Before we get into it, maybe for the audience, can you tell us a bit about yourself professionally and then just, you know, tell us what is it like being in Parliament House and budget week.
And if anyone is out there and they want to ask any questions, please do so onto the actual page and we'll try to answer them.
That sounds good, David. Yeah, no, to answer your question, Jonathan, so a little bit about myself. As I said, I head up policy at People with Disability Australia. For those who don't know what People with Disability Australia is, we're the national peak body that represents the 1 in 5 people with disability. And we are a disabled people's organisation. Our board is entirely made up of people with disability. Some of you may know our president, Samantha Connor. And a lot of our a lot of our staff, and including our CEO, and including myself, have disability. And there is as a national peak in the work that we do, but we're very much about trying to promote and the rights of people with disability. In terms of the second question, Jonathan, what's it like in Parliament on for the budget? It's pretty crazy, I've got to say. Like, it feels like everyone's there. This budget was particularly different because, as some people would know, the federal election is looming and it's around the corner, and so this budget had that kind of in the back of its mind, and so the policy was a bit light, I've got to say, when it came to the budget. There was, as I said, there was not much in it for people's disability, but it was definitely an election budget. And so for those who don't know how it's what it's like on the budget night itself, some people get to see the budget before it's released publicly. We were one of those organizations. So that's known as a budget lockup. And you kind of basically go in a room, you surrender your phones and you turn your laptop to flight mode, and they literally give you a huge chunk of paper that has all the budget material. And you have a couple of hours to read it all. So not much time at all. And I'm telling you, like, these things are, like, as probably, if I was to stack everything up together, they're probably about 30 centimeters high. So it's a lot of paper. And so 2 hours to go through all that isn't really a lot of time. So there's a bit of a way of reading them. You're not going to obviously read all that material in 2 hours.
Did you actually split it up into groups?
Oh, kind of. Like, it's just about knowing what to look for. And so, as I said earlier, just then, like, there's a bit of a process to reading the budget papers. So that's a bit of a skill for, and if you don't know what you're looking for, then it's a bit hard to read. But this is my third budget lockup. And so I had definitely a better sense of how to read the budget.
I've got a question. When you read it, if you've got any questions about things that should be reviewed, would they review it?
The budget's set, so they won't change anything. But there are people in the room who can help you answer or clarify any questions that you may have about the budget. So, for instance, when we were looking at the budget, and the budget said the scheme is going to be fully funded, the NTIS scheme, that is, was being fully funded, we wanted to know how the scheme would be fully funded. And so no one really could answer that. So, because it wasn't really made clear in the budget. And so we had to clarify with a few people and in the room, and they didn't really understand that. And so we had to call someone and get the answers. So it can be a bit of a interesting process, I've got to say, David.
Okay.
I have a question. Before you go into the lockup, do you strategize what each person from your group is going to look for, or is it just whatever you're looking at?
What is the strategy that you've come up with?
Yeah.
To have a look at it.
It's a good question, Jonathan. And so we absolutely do go in there knowing what it is that we're looking for. It's known as a budget process. So there's a whole, at the start of the, before we go into the room on the night itself, we actually spend some time working with our board, working with the members, and also our policy team to kind of decide what is it looking for. And then this year we had four things that we wanted to look. We were looking for. The first was enough protections for COVID. Obviously, the disability community has been actively deprioritized in when it came to COVID. So we were looking to see what measures would be in place to keep people safe and protected. The second thing that we looked for was emergency disaster measures. You know, a lot of people with disability, particularly in Queensland and in the northern rivers, northern parts of New South Wales, have been impacted by the floods recently. And so that's really started a conversation around inclusive disaster management and how do you ensure that people with disability are part of the response, the recovery, and the process to ensure that disasters, whenever they occur, are inclusive of people with disability. And so that was the second thing, and probably the most important thing we were looking for in the budget. And then we were looking for more advocacy funding in the budget as well. You know, there's a lot of NDIS appeals, for instance, and so we're looking to see if they were going to fund more people to provide support for those who are seeking to appeal NDIS decisions. That wasn't in it. And then lastly, the fourth thing that we're looking for was just for the scheme to be sustainably funded through a mechanism that would keep it secure. And we didn't see that. So those are the four things that we had, and we strategized to get to those four things. And unfortunately, the budget didn't deliver that.
When you look at the budget, is it harder for you to kind of detach the professional from the personal? Like, it might make you feel frustrated as a person with a disability to see there's not much in the budget for our community.
Yeah, it's not easy to separate and be detached, Jonathan. Like you know, it was very frustrating to kind of be forgotten again. And in a lot of ways, we were perhaps expecting it to go this way. So even though it was frustrating, it was still unsurprising. Are you going to say something, Jonathan? Or was that David?
Me. I know it's frustrating, but was it
So I think you're breaking up, David. I don't know. Is that just me, Jonathan?
No, he's breaking up. So let me ask a question. When you looked at the budget papers, was there one thing that really surprised you of what was in it or what was not in it?
Yeah, a few things surprised me. Not necessarily related to disability, because as I said, that was a bit light in the budget. But I was pleasantly surprised to see a commitment to, a special commitment to resettle Afghani refugees. I wasn't expecting to see that in this budget. I think there were 14,000 places that Australia had committed to do that, and I was, as I said, pleasantly surprised. I was also surprised to see about $10 million go to Dylan Alcott in the budget. $10 million is going to go to Dylan Alcott to help with the with leadership of women, disabled women in sports. So I thought that was an interesting thing to see in the budget.
As much as I respect Dylan Alcott, I just meet so many people with disabilities in my daily life. Doing extraordinary things, and I don't mean that in a patronizing way. And I think, how better would Australia be if we genuinely gave people with disabilities an opportunity to show their talents, to show they can contribute as equal members of society. What do you think about that?
Oh, look, all you're gonna get from me, Jonathan, is agreement. I absolutely agree. People with disability should be afforded every opportunity to live their full potential. But the difference between someone not doing that and someone who does that is making whether or not the person gets the right supports to participate equally in society. And when they do, we see them doing great things. Dylan Alcott's an example. One of my favorite people, Rosemary Keyes, is another example. Obviously, there's people like Samantha, Connor, who's our president. There's multiple examples of people with disability doing amazing things when they get the right supports. And their contributions to society are huge.
John, what would you have liked to have seen in this budget that wasn't put in the budget?
I would have liked to have seen more emergency disaster measures. As I said earlier, there was our community has kind of been left behind, not just with the floods, but COVID as well. So I would consider COVID as an emergency disaster that needed to be managed. And so we were really looking for that to be in the budget. We were looking for money for the disability community to kind of come together and figure out a plan to make sure that we're safe and protected. And we wanted to see that in this budget, and we didn't. And so actually, because we didn't see that, a couple of days after the budget on Thursday, People with Disability Australia released an open letter alongside Queenslanders with Disability, so QDN for short, basically outlining what we wanted to see in the election for all candidates going forward. Because it's that important of an issue. COVID hasn't been good for the community. A lot of us are still feeling isolated. A lot of us are still really worried. Obviously, the flood is a recent thing as well. And we need to make sure that we have the resources and the to be able to make up a plan that will work for us, because we can't trust the government or the people who should be making the plans for us to do the right job. And so we should really take control over that and want to put money into an opportunity to do that. And so that's why we released that open letter, and we would have liked to have seen it in the budget, but we didn't.
Do you think there needs to be more collaboration between peak bodies in the sector to push this message? What do you think is missing here? Is it that we're a small section of the population?
I don't think we are a small section of the population. 1 in 5 Australians have a disability, you know? So that's actually quite a big part of the population. I think what stops it is a lack of political will. The letter that I mentioned, the open letter to all candidates at the election, was endorsed by over 40 disability organisations. So we are actually working together. We are collaborating, and we're telling people what we need as a community, but they're still not listening. And so that's why I said that I think the biggest barrier is the political will. That's why that's frustrating, why that's in a lot of ways upsetting.
If you're speaking to people who've never heard of a peak body but want to advocate, in your opinion, what do you think is the first step
for people to get involved?
Yes.
Well, the first step would be to join a peak body that you can that you want to join or that interests you. So, for those who don't know, People with Disability Australia is a membership organisation. It's free to join. Anyone can join with a disability, and that's the first step. There's other organisations that exist as well, like Women with Disability Australia, National, I think, Disability Alliance, and others. A lot of these organisations are...
John, what are the positives of the budget?
For the disability community or in... Or
yeah, for
in
disability general? And everyone. Mainly disability.
I wouldn't say there is a positive, David.
So we're left out.
That's the key message. We called it a lean, mean budget.
Okay.
It was light on disability. It didn't deliver. So I wouldn't say that was a positive at all for the disability community.
No positive. What about support workers?
That wasn't for the disability community. That's for the what they call in the care sector. So we actually would have concerns about some of that stuff as well, because at the moment the Australian government is trying to do what they're calling regulatory alignment between the disability aged care and veterans affairs, and we're worried that this standard in support work could go backwards because of this so-called regulatory alignment. you know, we fought quite a lot to make sure that disability supports, are equality and are safe. And we're concerned that, you know, this budget actually has put money towards the alignment of the care sector and what that could mean. So in the past week, there was another piece of legislation known as the Aged Care Bill. And in that legislation, there was a schedule around restrictive practices. You know, obviously, the disability community wouldn't support the use of unauthorized restrictive practices. But if it's in the aged care sector through this piece of legislation, and we're trying to align regulation across the aged care and disability sectors, are we like, it's almost, there's a potential for us to go backwards. And so I'm still, there are concerns there.
Do you think just sticking with the disability sector, there needs to be a key initiative to promote real time reporting of incidents and going further? We see in other sectors like education and health, that actually publicly available data on quality and performance. Do we need a similar arrangement in the disability sector?
It's a John? Good question, Jonathan. Yeah, David.
Well, answer Jonathan's question.
Okay, sure. So I've forgotten the question now. I'll try and remember. So, for me, Jonathan, there's a few things to unpack. I'm not sure how real time reporting would work. So I'm not sure if a budget would necessarily made it a difference. Because if you think about it, like last year, just taking restrictive practices for instance, last year, at the end of last year, the Quality and Safeguards Commission found that there were just over a million unauthorized restrictive practices, and they were required to report those unauthorized restrictive practices, which is a good thing, right? But that's over a million instances where restrictive practices were used when they shouldn't have. So really, the question I think is how do we ensure that people don't resort to restrictive practices when, in the first instance, like people are you know, jumping to restrictive practices straight away when it should be a last resort. And so maybe there is something to learn from the UK and other organisations where support workers are need to be invested in so they can learn how to support people with disability so they don't actually resort to restrictive practices so early on.
So does to draw parallels, I think what you're saying is prevention work is better than having to Heaven as it already happened. Is that what you're saying?
So I didn't quite catch all that. There was a bit of noise. Do you mind repeating that?
What I said was, I got from that you leaning towards prevention and education before an incident
happened. Yeah, that's right, Jonathan. Like these, we shouldn't. I'm kind of flipping the question on its head a bit. Like if there are over a million unauthorized restrictive practices, the problem lies in the workforce, our support workers not knowing how to support us properly, as well as not knowing how to support the decision making of people with disability, and so they feel like they need to resort to restrictive practices.
Yeah. Okay, John Carlo, do you have any final thoughts about the budget?
My final thought on the budget is that the budget should have been an opportunity to speak to the disability community as the Commonwealth gears itself towards a federal election. I just hope that during the election campaign, which will be called any second now, that we won't be forgotten. And when the new government does form, that future budgets will include us, because we need to really be seen as not just the NDIS, we need to be seen.
Can they change the budget from here?
Not really. No, like they can make other announcements, but they can't change the budget. They can make other announcements. So there is
possibility to add on to it.
Get things. They can add on to it. Yeah.
Good. Hopefully they do.
Yeah. So we will be trying to see what we can get. Take a period. For those who don't know, so when an election is called, the government enters what's known as caretaker mode, and there's an opportunity. There are opportunities in that period of time to seek other commitments.
Okay.
So hopefully we can get those, David.
Hopefully, you've been watching Group Chat, your weekly podcast
for disability. What about my final thought?
What's your final thought, Johnson?
Look, this is a perfect opportunity for people with disabilities to get organized.
Absolutely.
If you're passionate about an issue, if you have a group of peers, reach out and know you're not alone in your frustrations. It's better to know that you've done something than do nothing at all.
I agree, Jonathan. I agree.
I totally agree. What a great message to end on, Jonathan. And now's the time to get active and to tell people what it is that you're passionate about, to see the change that you think needs to happen, because it's the election time. So let's go out there, folks.
Okay.
You've been watching Crew Chat, your weekly podcast for everything disability. Thank you for joining us, and join next week for more. If you want, please like and share, and leave a comment if you want anything to be spoken about or any topics. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Jonathan. David, bye. Thank you.